Tonight on Arena, live in studio, Grammy Award-winning singer-songwriter Mary Chapin Carpenter and James Quinn McDonough on a new documentary. With a career spanning over three decades and more than 16 million records sold, five-time Grammy Award-winning singer-songwriter Mary Chapin Carpenter has been a defining voice in American folk and country music. A Nashville Songwriter Hall of Fame inductee, she's known for hits like Passionate Kisses and He Thinks He'll Keep Her. Recently, she launched the podcast Hope is a Muscle, featuring conversations with people from all walks of life. Her latest album, Looking for the Thread, is a collaboration with Scottish artist Julie Fowlis and Careen Polewart. The project blends diverse musical traditions, reflecting Carpenter's commitment to artistic exploration. Carpenter is also set to perform at the 7th RTE Radio 1 Folk Awards tomorrow evening. Mary Chapin, you're so welcome on Arena.
I'm so happy to be here. Thank you.
Now, there's a buzz around RTE about you performing at the Folk Awards tomorrow night. We're all very excited about that.
Nice. That's so nice.
But you have a long background and love and affinity with Irish music ever since you were a young girl listening to music.
It's true. I think probably the gateway artist for me was Paul Brady and Andy Irving and so many others. I've loved traditional music of all kinds and certainly Irish music. And it's just always been this passion of mine. So whenever we've been able in all these years to come over here and tour and to be with some of my favorite artists, to get to know them as people, it just feels otherworldly to me. It's wonderful.
Now, you're sitting here in studio with your guitar and yes. You're going to sing for us, and it's called Girl and Her Dog. Tell us a little about that
song. So this is a new song from an album that I just finished recording last month that will come out actually this summer when I'm on tour. This is a song that I wrote recently about that feeling. Well, there's this place near where I live in the Blue Ridge Mountains of Virginia, and I like to take my dog walking there in the early mornings. And I had just passed a, shall we say, a significant birthday. And as I'm sure you can understand and your listeners know as well, the older we get, sometimes the more challenging life can be, and sometimes we feel a little bit more invisible as time goes on, whatever our profession. And I was struggling with, you know, who am I? What have I done? What am I going to do? You know, all of those questions, and looking for, you know, role models to how to age gracefully, certainly in my business and in life in general. And one morning I was walking along in this beautiful arboretum near where I live with my dog, and I saw this old vintage pickup truck going down the road, and I stepped aside to let it go by. And in the cab, the window of the cab, I could see the back of the head of this beautiful woman with beautiful salt and pepper hair in a long braid. And then the two other heads next to her were two dogs. And I just stopped and I thought, I just made up this story in my head, who she was. Like, she's an artist, or she's a poet, or she's a writer, she's a painter. And maybe she's taken her dogs for a walk and now she's on her way home. And she's going to have another cup of coffee in her garden and get to work and feel full of purpose, and this is the meaning in her life, and it's her identity. And I realized it's really all very simple. It's not about the stuff that you accumulate in your life. It's not about a new car. It's not about awards. It's not about any of those things. It's about who you feel you are authentically and how you want to make your mark on the world. And somehow it became this song. It's called Girl and Her Dog.
Everyone asks when you're growing up, who do you want to be? I never had an answer, couldn't figure out why I couldn't see myself as some future other, no one's partner, no one's mother, No one's answer, no one's lover, nobody but me. But the older I get, the more I see that more by itself never worked for me. Keeping it simple as it can be, walking along just him and me. Mornings here with a coffee cup, songs in my head and looking up. If the rain holds off, we'll be in luck. But we're lucky anyway. A long time ago, I got married once, and it didn't take long to find that the words I heard coming out of his mouth were not the truthful kind. I thought about moving to LA, maybe upstate or the UK, anywhere as long as it's far away from what I'd left behind. And the older I get, the more I'm sure that more by itself never was a cure. Some days I've got nothing to show for except walking the dog and walking the floor. Mornings here with a coffee cup, stories in my head and looking up. If the rain holds off, we'll be in luck. But we're lucky anyway. In summer, neighbors leave tomatoes. In fall, dust coats your tires. Spring greens up every shadow. In December, we lay a fire. I figure I'm finally old enough to know who I want to be when I grow up. A girl and her dog riding in the truck. Wave as we're going by. Now the older I get, the less I need. Just a good old dog underneath the trees. Keeping it simple as it can be. Fitting together like a puzzle piece. Mornings here with a coffee cup. Whistling for him while I'm looking up. If the rain holds off, we'll be in luck. But we're lucky anyway. We're lucky anyway.
Much, Mary Chapin.
My pleasure.
Mary Chapin Carpenter there, and her a brand new song called Girl and Her Dog. And that sounds like pretty idyllic life you have in the Blue Ridge Mountains. Is that pretty true to life?
It is. It very much is. I live on a beautiful farm, as I said, in the Blue Ridge Mountains, and it's full of solitude, but to me it just feels very rich and very full. And I always think of the wonderful quote by Carl Sandburg, who was the great American poet. He had a farm in Flat Rock, North Carolina, at the end of his life, where he raised goats with his wife and worked on his poems. And he loved being at his farm, and he called it the creative hush of the farm. And I feel like that is what I get from my place as well.
And do you feel that that creative hush has always been with you? Because you seem to have been a very prolific writer all your life.
I don't think of myself as prolific at all. In the sort of the arc of making records and that sort of thing, it always has taken me 4 or 5 years. I'm not one of those artists that the head of Spotify thinks is worth anything, because I don't just churn it out. But anyway, I do feel like I love being at the farm, and I love just sitting at my kitchen table writing.
And a song like that, then, would that come to you? I know you're the queen of wonderful phrases within your songs that you build a song around, but does it take a long time when you get that phrase then to build the song, and not alone the song, but the lyrics of the song, but the music as well?
You know, I think each song is different in the sense that, I mean, if I look back at the songs that I've written, some of them happen very quickly. Which always feels very, you know, magical and mystical in a way. And you kind of wish it all came that easily. And then others, you know, have, you know, sat in a folder for years before they became something. So it's just different with each one for me.
Yes, because there's a song from your new album called Satellite, and it's a whole world, a world of people, of your central character in space.
Right.
And that the sadness of leaving, you know, what's happening in the journey, but
right.
Also the sadness of what the person has left behind.
Well, I had read the story about this sort of zombie spaceship that was left to just orbit for the rest of eternity through the cosmos. That I think it had been launched. Oh my gosh, I'm going to get it wrong, but years and years ago. And then when it was no longer, you know, relevant, they just let it drift. And I don't know how to explain it, but I just felt this sadness. And there was this group of scientists that were trying to actually lasso it and try to get it back into Earth's orbit so that they could use it for experiments. And they just couldn't quite get it. But there are these people who were devoted to this zombie spaceship. And I just, you know, I don't know. I just attached human emotions to it. And that record that you're speaking of course, is called Looking for the Thread. And that is a collaborative record with the incredible Scottish artists Julie Fowlis and Corinne Polwart.
And how did that collaboration come about?
It was something that I have thought about for years and years and years, that I've always just wanted to do a collaboration of some kind. And during the pandemic, like many people, I had a lot of time on my hands to think about it. And so Julie and Corinne are two of my favorite artists on the planet. And I just reached out to Julie first and asked her if she would be interested in seeing if there was something there, you know, to put together, and asked her also if she could bring Corinne into the conversation. And thankfully, they both said yes.
Now, it's an album of 10 tracks.
Yes.
And you, I think you've written 4 or 5 of the tracks.
Four
of the tracks.
Yeah.
And then the Julie and Karine have
yes.
written the others.
Yes.
So, and I think one at least is traditional.
Yes.
Yeah.
Two of them.
So how does that, so are you bringing your own work and then it's the vocal that you're collaborating and harmonizing
well,
on?
Well, what we did in the spirit of trying to sort of put something together without any roadmap whatsoever, we got together and went to a remarkable place called Kinloch Moidart, about 4 or 5 hours northwest of Glasgow. And it was a beautiful country house. They fed us. They took care of us. They built fires for us. And we sat around in this beautiful old house and just played music with each other. And then we'd sort of retreat to our various corners, work on our own things, and come back together. And it started to feel like there was something there stitching itself together. And in the end, and we went back for another retreat as well. So over the course of about 2.5 years, I think it roughly was, this thing sort of came into being. And it's something we love.
Well, let's give our listeners a taste of it. We'll go back to the zombie spaceship that
okay.
you were talking about, and let's listen to a little of Satellite.
from all wires and aluminum, comet dust and nitrogen. I followed everyone's command. First 18 years were fine and grand. No space junk upon this ship. Flying high at 36, without flash, without conceit. I've done all they asked of me. But every journey that begins should have an ending. Beside this daily stream of data I keep sending, beyond the stars where time and space are bending, I miss home. Lift off August 78, no malfunctions to relate. 30 billion miles I've come, all those trips around the sun. For my trials with ice and fire, they inked a deal that I'd retire. Air and space wants me on view on Independence Avenue. The brass, they disapproved of my ambitions. After all these years of silence, I still listen. Between fever dreams of static and transmissions, I miss home.
That Satellite from Looking for the Thread, the new album from Mary Chapin Carpenter, Julie Fowlis and Karine Polwart. Julie Fowlis is, we've spoken to her here on Arena, and she's, of course, a Scots Gaelic.
Yes.
And she writes a lot in her own language.
Yes.
When you were having that collaboration between you, was it thematic? Did you want to talk about themes that would gel?
It was very interesting in the sense that when we first got together, the songs that we all sort of brought individually to the project, they had these connecting threads. It's like, it's as if we had a brief beforehand, but we didn't. It just happened that, you know, it's nature, the environment, science, love, all the things that, you know, are part of every day and all the things that we think about in our lives all the time. But as Karine says, we were just kind of geeking out about, you know, satellites and salmon swimming upriver and, you know, a tree that has initials inscribed. And so there were just lots of things that ended up connecting. It was wonderful.
Now, I know you'd like us to play a track from one of the other contributors.
Yes. Yes.
Will you tell us a little bit about Karine Polwart? Because we know Julie's work, I think, maybe a little better here in Ireland.
Karine is a remarkable artist. She's an extraordinary songwriter, activist, environmental advocate. She has a life and a focus and a genius about her work that it leaves me breathless all the time. And I believe that the song that you're playing is Hold Everything. And it's just, it's deeply moving to me. It speaks of the times that we are in. I don't think it requires a whole lot of explanation beyond that. I think the listener can recognize that.
Did you hear the car coming? Did you stumble and fall? Did you sleep without waking? Were you ready to go? Or did you feel the tightening pain in your chest? Did you lie down that morning and pray for eternal rest?
That's Hold Everything from Looking for the Thread, the new album by Mary Chapin Carpenter, Julie Fowlis and Karine Polwart. And that was her song there. I think Caoimhín Oirithealla is also playing on this album. Caoimhín Oirithealla.
Oh, yes. Yes.
Yes. The multi-instrumental Caoimhín Oirithealla.
Speaking of genius, he is definitely one. It was such a pleasure. He came to the sessions. We were recording in at Real World Studios in Western England. And he flew over from Ireland and he was in the sessions with us. And it was such a joy to listen to him play, to talk to him. He's an amazing person and he's done so many things musically and artistically. And he's just brilliant.
Now that you are living in the Blue Ridge Mountains and seem to have a very, not easygoing, but a very pleasant life, mm-hmm. how does it compare with the heady days of, you know, performing in Nashville, performing? I know you still perform all over the world, but, Grammy Award winning, do you feel, nostalgic for that time? Or do you feel, do you think about it a lot?
I don't spend a lot of time thinking about back then, you know? I mean, it's sometimes, as I think we all feel this way at times, we reflect on a time in our life that was different from the way we live now. And it feels like, was that another person? Was that another lifetime? If you're connected to it, but it seems just slightly echoey and distant, you know? I don't miss the frenetic pace of it. And that certainly is what it was at a certain period of time. But the way I think about it in a way is that I couldn't have the life I have now if I hadn't had that life then. I worked really hard for a very long period of time and I still work hard because I love what I do. I feel like it's a gift that I've been given to have some sort of a career in the arts and to be an artist in the times we are living in now is something that I hold even tighter to my spirit because I think well, I'll just leave it there.
So we want to end this lovely segment and wish you the best of luck at the Folk Awards tomorrow night.
Oh, thank you.
But we want to end with Passionate Kisses. Will you bring us back there and introduce us?
Well, this is a song by the great Lucinda Williams. And I was on tour with Lucinda and Roseanne Cash in Australia in the early 90s. And Lucinda would play this song every night, and I would harmonize with her. We were all on stage swapping songs all night long. And one night I just said to her, God, I just love that song so much. Would it be okay with you if I recorded it? And she looked at me and she said, oh, have at it. Go for it. And I was like, I have the blessing, you know. So I remember just heading into the studio, and because I get to inhabit this beautiful, amazing song for 3.5 minutes every night on stage that I get to play it. And it's just one of the best songs. It's an anthem.
Mary Chapin Carpenter, thank you so much for joining us.
My pleasure.
things that won't run out of ink, and cool quiet and time to play. Shouldn't I have this? Shouldn't I have this? Shouldn't I have all of this? And passionate kisses, passionate kisses, whoa, whoa, passionate kisses.
Passionate Kisses there, performed by our guest Mary Chapin Carpenter. Mary Chapin, good luck tomorrow night. Mary Chapin will perform live at the RT Folk Awards tomorrow evening at 8 p.m. on Radio 1. Looking for the Thread is out now, and as she said, we're to look forward to a solo album very soon. Kathy Sweeney is an author of a short story collection, Modern Times, and the novel Breakdown. Michael McGee made his debut in 2023 with the novel Close to Home. They are two of the contributors writing about film and so much more in a new book of essays, In Good Seats. Other authors include Ellie Smith and Darren Anderson. In each case, the author uses a particular film or particular film watching habit as a setting off point. In the essay Summer with Monica, Kathy Sweeney experiences watching an Ingmar Bergman classic that changes over the year as she watches it. In Michael McGee's piece, Because, he looks back at his six-year-old self watching The Wizard of Oz and relates it to his own early impulse to write. I'm delighted that Kathy Sweeney is with me now in studio, and Michael McGee is on the line from Belfast. So, Kathy, what kind of a brief did you get from the publishers?
Well, the wonderful thing about this, Kay, was that when this book was being put together in The Good Seats, the brief was wide open. And I think what that did was it stirred within all 14 writers, I'm sure, this moment where you're aware of how much film means and what a place it holds in all of our lives and our imagination, this escape world. And therefore, the 14 pieces in the book are completely different and very, very personal. And for me, I just hit upon Summer with Monica by Ingmar Bergman, because when I'd first watched the film, I was intrigued with it. On one level, it's a very simple film. Two teenagers, Harry and Monica, escape a dreary post-world Stockholm for this one summer of love in the archipelago, and it's sunlit and they're swimming and they're in touch with nature. And it's this moment of just idyllic perfection. And of course, then with the first chill of autumn, hunger, pregnancy, they're drawn back into the so-called real world.
They're forced to go back by circumstance, yes.
They certainly are. And that is a theme that plays out in many of Bergman's films, this tension between what is real and what is dream. I knew at the time that I wasn't finished with the film. I think that's what a good work of art does. It brings up questions and opens up a space where you know there's more in the experience to be had. And when I sat down then to rewatch it with this essay in mind, I was quite fascinated with a particular shot, and it occurs 15 minutes before the end of the film. And it is a very much a kind of a well-known moment within the history of film. For 30 wordless seconds, the camera just focuses in on a close-up of Monica. And she's staring straight down that lens. And there's something in this look that is both intriguing, confrontational, and really, I think, in me this time, very much kind of forced me to respond in a way that I hadn't expected. And isn't that the wonder of film? That suddenly her experience, my experience, the sleazy world of filmmaking, the cultural context, all of these things were suddenly highlighted at a particular angle that I hadn't considered before. And
yes, because you started looking into the actress and why that particular actress was cast in the first place, and then the attitude of both the filmmaker, Ingmar Bergman, to her, but also the critical reaction that, that her presence in the film got, because she's kind of a young teenager who seems to be in enjoying her time, is a very sensual person. But of course, that is sent to, given to us through the eye of the filmmaker.
Certainly, and that most definitely is there. Harriet Anderson, who takes on the role of Monica, is superb in this role. And the end shots of the film are Harry's memories of her, these iconic scenes of her in this sensual moment, you know, stretched out. And enjoying her youth, her vitality, her sexuality. And yet, there's so much more. And I think that that's where the one shot that broke the fourth wall kind of invited the reader in. And I feel Bergman was very purposefully doing this, inviting us in to consider how we consume film and how we often remember what is most pleasurable and what is most attractive. While we overlook some of the other elements. And yes, it was that kind of opening out of the film that really brought me to the point where I wanted to write an essay and I wanted to respond about how at different stages of our lives we read movies differently, and how with a film like this film, Summer with Monica, there's just so much ongoing complexity in how we can respond to it.
Yes, I think Michael McGee, who looked at The Wizard of Oz again. Michael, I think you had a similar experience in looking at a film through different stages of your life.
For sure. I mean, I first watched that film when I was six, and so much of the experience of watching it had to do with how young I was, how completely open I was to the sort of possibilities that were being offered in front of me, and how willing I was to sort of give myself over to the dream, you know, of sort of buying into the dream of watching and sort of dissolving into it. And I think that was something I didn't actually watch The Wizard of Oz again while writing this essay. I sort of decided that I wouldn't. And as I was sort of thinking back and writing the essay, I was trying to remember the last time I had watched it. And the only time I could think of was this time when I was 6 years old on a summer's evening, you know, in my bedroom. And I think those conditions sort of, you know, opened me up in a way that I hadn't, you know, I think was very important in some way.
What were the defining images that you remember from then? Was it Dorothy in Kansas, or was it Dorothy when she went to Oz?
I think there's certainly there's a particular moment when the tornado approaches the house and the house is swept up into the storm, and you get this overlay of Dorothy's face across the screen, which is interestingly a technique that Bergman uses in his films, this kind of overlay. And it's that sort of moment where her sort of consciousness is in some way being split, you know, that she's sort of entering the dream realm. And then, of course, the moment where she steps out the door and colour emerges. I think that was probably one of the images that's really burned into my mind.
Now, another thing that you refer to, of course, Dorothy is played by Judy Garland. And let's hear her sing Somewhere Over the Rainbow from the 1939 film as The Wizard of Oz.
Heard of once in a lullaby.
And then, Michael, we'll play a little from 1969 when Judy Garland hasn't long to live and she's singing Over the Rainbow on stage. There we go, the older Judy Garland singing Somewhere Over the Rainbow. And Michael, you finished the story with this image of you and friends listening to various versions of Somewhere Over the Rainbow.
Yes, I did. And it was, you know, it was an unexpected kind of event, actually. You know, I was sitting in a friend's flat. We might have been having a couple of drinks. It was quite late in the game, as you say, and a friend of mine, a Belfast poet, suggested we do this. And this is something that I think she had done several times before, is that she liked listening to. There's actually three versions of that song recorded on YouTube, one just before the first and the third there. And it was just listening to how her voice changed. Emotional kernel of the song remains the same, but yet we still get the kind of the different nuances of time and age and experience sort of creeping into it in different ways. But of course, the message remains the same. You know, this kind of feeling that that life is elsewhere. You know, that we all sort of.
And it sounds, Cathy, like Michael took the same brief as you did, you know, this idea of making it a very personal experience for In the Good Seeds, this book of essays.
I think that was the wonder of it, that we were given such freedom to, you know, really interrogate our own passions. And I think, again, when you're looking across then at the 14 different essays, some things are universal. This sense of film having this space in all our lives of an escape, a dream world, the theatre of dreams, something that we can we're transported by. And in an essay I particularly enjoyed, which was one called High Speed by the Irish writer Maggie Armstrong, she's wonderful at conjuring this, how important it is within the domestic arena, particularly that moment when everyone is comforted by, as she calls it, the dark lacquered window to
yes,
calm and peacefulness.
It's so true that so many of the essays are about the activity of watching a film. Cathy Sweeney and Michael McGee, thank you so much for talking to us about In the Good Seats, Essays on Film, and it's published by PVA Books. The rate of suicide among traveller men is almost seven times that among settled men. Spurred by the loss of close friends, the bare-knuckle boxing champion and traveller activist James Quinn McDonough has made a documentary about the mental health struggles faced by traveller men in the UK and in Ireland. The film is called Mind Your Head and it will premiere at the Dublin International Film Festival this Thursday. I'm delighted to be joined by James Quinn McDonough, who presented and produced the documentary, and Saga Torlakson, who directed it. Let's listen to a clip first of all. This is Andy, who is a person from the travelling community in the UK, who Michael Quinn McDonough spoke to for the documentary. Here Andy is in a state of distress as he's doctors at the Danbury Medical Centre in Essex, and he's talking about his mental pain.
The drugs is not solving my problem. I can do that myself. I can go out and get drugs, but I don't want to do that. That's not
get
the thing.
Drugs
that
they can give you.
Yeah, I probably could. I could probably get better drugs than what you can give me. Like, and I don't want that. I don't want the drugs. I don't want the dirt. Man,
yeah.
I feel like everything is against me. And then, like, you can't. Some days I feel strong, and some days I feel like I can act strong. But other days it just gets on the top of me. I know it's all about stepping stones, but I don't feel like I've even taken a step back. I need some help. I'm not the best reader. I'm not the best writer. Yeah, I can do the basics, but do you know what I mean? I can't. Like, all of these, some of these things that they're asking you and these questionnaire things, and I don't even know what they're asking me. Then I'm not giving them an answer to it. Like.
That is Andy from the new documentary Mind Your Head, which is made by James Quinn McDonough, and Saga Torlakson is the director. We have some technical difficulties at the moment, but we're going to play another clip from the documentary. Here, Laura McDonough from the Meath Travellers Workshop. James spoke to Laura McDonough at the Meath Travellers Workshop about the needs of traveller men and their mental health.
Mental health is at 9 to 5, so at 5 o'clock of a Friday evening, if I go to you and say I'm suffering from mental health issues, I need help, do I have to wait till Monday morning to get assessed?
You shouldn't.
So you shouldn't. So them services, you need 24 hour around the healthcare for them. You do, and it's not available, and it's not available. If the statistics was in any other culture or any other ethnic minority, it'd be an epidemic.
What can be done over here to help the young travelling man with his mental health?
Without travellers helping each other, they're not going to go further help. They're not. You need traveller-led organisations, you need traveller-run programmes, culturally appropriate programmes, and you need traveller-only counselling services.
Our population within the travelling community, our suicide rate is way above other ethnic groups.
Because it's years of internalised oppression, James. Because if you're told all your life that you're worthless and you're nothing and you're below the level of everybody else in the community, you start to believe it.
And the standard of treatment from...
And you start to believe it. So if I'm told all my life that I'm not to the same level as they are, that they're more superior than me, if I haven't got the family support or the support of other travel organisations around the country, I start to believe it and I become it.
There, that was Laura McDonough from the Meath Travellers Workshop, and she was talking to James Quinn McDonough, and that is an extract from James's documentary Mind Your Head. We had some technical difficulties, but we have James Quinn McDonough on the line. You're so welcome, James.
Thank you very much, Kay, for having us online today.
Tell us, how did the documentary come about? What spurred you on to make it?
What spurred me on is I've lost too many friends and family, especially a lot of very, very close friends, to suicide and mental health, especially within the travel community. Travel men, you know, don't recognise that they've got issues or problems. And we've had to get something done about this. And I've been, you know, waiting for someone to do a documentary on it. And for years, and no one has reached out and done it. So I decided, you know, to do it and do it proper. And I think this is more of an educational documentary, I believe, in educating travellers to reach out to the services that's available for them and to accept that help, because our main subject, Andy Spoon, was, you know, homeless, on the streets, drug addict, no work, no job, just ready to, you know, to lie down and die. And, you know, from what the help we've got him through the year and a half, 2 years, he's went to rehab, he's got a house, he's got to see his kids again, he's off all alcohol, he's off all drugs. So it's a success story in itself, and we just want to see that continue.
Yes, we played a clip of Andy there, and Andy was very vulnerable when he speaks to you early on in the documentary. And then as you talk to other people throughout the documentary, we see Andy as he is progressing, getting some help, even though the help is never, you know, sufficient, I think.
I agree with you in that way. I agree. But, you know, Andy himself was, you know, was to me at death's door. He gave up all hope on the system and helping him out. And it's the likes of Andy who we need people like Andy to reach out to the services, to the authorities, to wherever he needs to, especially the young travelling men who is committing suicide on a weekly rate in the UK and Ireland, to reach out to the doctors, to wherever, just to find out help, talk to people, let people know that, you know, it's okay not to be okay.
And James, you're a boxer. You mix with young men all the time in your sport. What kind of problems? How do they tell you about their problems? What do they say to you?
You know, boxing, we're just going to go to the boxing for 10 seconds. Boxing is a great relief for any traveller, because from knee high, we want, you know, we get a certain community to ride a bike or to kick a football. With young travelling kids, it's boxing because it's in their bloodstream. But it helps them. But when I do be training those young kids and all that, you can see signs of some not well. But the ones that escape us is the young 25, 30-year-old travelling men who is embarrassed to reach out. And they're the ones I'm trying to get the message to. It's to really speak out. And we, you know, I'm not trained up in any way whatsoever to recognise signs of that, but I can sense them. But, you know, for the person that is not well, my advice is just please go to your doctor.
Now, you talked to Laura McDonough and she talked about internalised oppression. I mean, that's a term. But how would you see that on a daily basis? Do people feel, I don't know, do they feel like that they have no chance of getting a job, no chance of moving on their circumstances? Is that how it manifests itself?
I'll tell you what I would say is, right, I've done an interview with Sunday World last Sunday, and it was printed last Sunday. I posted that result of the link of that on my social media. I've had over 400 comments. 300 of those comments were from the settled community. It's very, very hard to read them. It's about, you know, exterminated. They should be, you know, don't treat them, don't give those people mental health education, because just let them kill themselves. I've had so much negative comments on this subject, and that's what turns young travelling men and women away from, you know, seeking help, is looking at that social media on the abuse that we take. Even though I'm just trying to get the message out there to help those people, the negative abuse I got from the settled community is unbelievable, and it's disrespectful. But it's something that we keep fighting on with.
And another point that was made, you talked to a policeman, an English policeman, in this documentary.
Paul Mallory, yes,
that's right. And you talk about, and he says that the prisons are full of prisoners, but in what they're actually dealing is with mental health, people who have mental health problems.
I asked the question to Paul was, what are the prison system in the UK and Ireland doing for young travellers? And not just, what, this documentary is not just for young travellers either. It's for every young man in Ireland and England, you know, to seek help. That's what I'd like to clear up. It's targeting young travellers, but it's advice to everyone to get help when you need it. But Paul Miller, the police officer, was telling me that there is systems in place within the prison system, but he disagrees with most of them because they're not helping. You know, when a prisoner goes in to a long-term, say, a 3 to 4 or 5 year prison sentence, and he's got mental health issues, he's just given a course of SRIs or whatever you want to call them, antidepressants, and it's gone away, sent away for 6 weeks. But he doesn't get assessed, he doesn't get the treatment that he deserves. So they're coming out of prison, you know, like the suicide rate within the prison system, within the travelling community, is very, very high. So there's something not right, there's something not being done for them.
You talked to the actor John Connors as well, and John talks movingly about his own struggles with mental health and also about his father's. That's a very strong part of your film.
It is. John's actually a family relation of ours, and, you know, John's story is very moving, you know, because of what happened when his dad, God rest his soul, and John felt, you know, he was going down the same track till he pulled out of it, you know. But, you know, I can honestly say that every traveller, in my opinion, 99% of traveller men, you know, get those thoughts. For the man that says he doesn't, he's lying. And it's just like the same in the cell community. It's how each individual deals with them and how the family help them. And families are the most important thing in a person's lives when they're feeling vulnerable like that. Is that I think travellers need to be, the travelling families need to be keeping a very close eye on their youngsters as well, teenagers and young 20, 30-year-olds, and what's going on in their lives, because anything can trigger that disease. And that's what I call it, a disease. And it's rampant through the traveller community. So again, I'm just trying to get get out there is that, like John Connors, he's pulled out of that. You know, I know a lot of other people, I think God has pulled out of it. But the advice is just, you know, follow our footsteps and go and seek your medical attention.
And John, do you think boxing saved you, that boxing gave you a purpose, or do you think you were a fairly resilient person from the get-go?
No, I think boxing saves a lot of drug trauma men's lives, because it gets the aggression out of them, it gets the other thoughts, the mental thoughts, the evil thoughts, whatever triggers that disease in itself. I just think that boxing is a big part of traveling men's lives, and that's what I'm actually, my next move is to try and open a traveler boxing club, but open to everyone, but aimed at travellers. That's what I'm trying to do in Essex at the moment.
Now, it's about traveler men, but I mean, there's no doubt, I'm sure, that issues of mental health are across the gender divide within travellers. It's just that you picked this because you felt that men needed to be encouraged to go and seek help.
Correct. As Laura McDonough said on the documentary, you know, mental health doesn't target travellers, it targets every person in the world, you know, every nationality, every culture, every ethnic group. But I think, you know, I know many, many young travelling men who wouldn't be around today if it wasn't for boxing. Because boxing saves lives, and that's a fact.
Well, James Crane McDonough, thank you so much for talking to us. Mind Your Head will have its debut screening at the Dublin International Film Festival this Thursday at 4:30 in the Lighthouse Cinema. There'll be a Q&A with James and the director, Saga Torlakson, after the film. Tickets are still available. See diff.ie for more information. That's it for tonight's show. Remember, you can hear Mary Chapin Carpenter tomorrow night on the Folk Awards, which will be on just after Arena at 8 p.m. Tonight's show was researched by Paula Shields and Leah Murphy. Jamie Doyle was on sound. Ollie Hamilton was the broadcast coordinator, and the programme was produced by Reg Luby. John Creedon is next.